3. During the 12-week voyage between 6319 and 14020, Loken had come to the conclusion that Cinderman was avoiding him. He finally located him in the endless stacks of Archive Chamber 3. The iterator was sitting in a stilt chair, examining ancient texts secured on one of the high shelves of the Archive's gloomiest back annexes. There was no bustle of activity back here, no hurrying servitors laden with requested books. Loken presumed that the material catalogued in this area was of little interest to the average scholar. Cinderman didn't hear him approach. He was intently studying a fragile old manuscript, the stilt chair's reading lamp tilted over his left shoulder to illuminate the pages.
"Hello,"
Loken hissed. Cinderman looked down and saw Loken. He stared slightly, as if woken from a deep sleep.
"Carvio,"
he whispered.
"One moment."
Cinderman put the manuscript back on the shelf, but several other books were piled up in the chair's basket rack. As he reshelved the manuscript, Cinderman's hands seemed to tremble. He pulled a brass lever on the chair's armrest, and the stilt legs telescoped down with a breathy hiss until he was at ground level. Loken reached out to steady the iterator as he stepped out of the chair.
"Thank you, Garvio."
"What are you doing back here?"
Loken asked.
"Oh, you know. Reading."
"Reading what?"
Cinderman cast what Loken judged to be a slightly guilty look at the books in his chair's rack. Guilty or embarrassed.
"I confess," Cinderman said, "I have been seeking solace in some old and terribly unfashionable material. Pre-unification fiction, and some poetry. Just desolate scraps. For so little remains, but I find some comfort in it."
"May I?"
Loken asked, gesturing to the basket.
"Of course,"
said Cinderman. Loken sat down in the brass chair, which creaked under his weight, and took some of the old books out of the side basket to examine them. They were frayed and foxed, even though some of them had evidently been rebound or sleeved from earlier bindings prior to archiving.
"The Golden Age of Sumaturan Poetry," Loken said. "Folk Tales of Old Muscovy." "What's this? The Chronicles of Ursh." "Boisterous fictions and bloody histories, with the occasional smattering of fine lyric verse."
Loken took out another heavy book.
"Tyranny of the Pan-Pacific,"
he read, and flipped open the cover to see the title page.
"An epic poem in 9 cantos, exalting the rule of Narth and Duma. It sounds rather dry. It's raw-headed and robust, and quite bawdy in parts. The work of overexcited poets trying to turn the matter of their own wretched times into myth. I'm rather fond of it. I used to read such things as a child. Fairy tales from another time."
"A better time?"
Cinderman balked.
"Oh, Terra, no. An awful time. A murderous, rancorous age, when we were sliding into species doom, not knowing that the Emperor would come and apply the brakes to our cultural plummet."
"But they comfort you."
"They remind me of my boyhood. That comforts me."
"Do you need comforting?" Loken asked,
putting the books back in the basket and looking up at the old man.
"I've barely seen you since. Since the mountains,"
Cinderman finished, with a sad smile.
"Indeed. I've been to the school on several occasions to hear you brief the iterators, but always there's someone standing in for you. How are you?"
Cinderman shrugged.
"I confess, I've been better. Your injuries still."
"I've healed in body, Garvio, but—"
Cinderman tapped his temple with a gnarled finger.
"I'm unsettled. I haven't felt much like speaking. The fire's not in me just now. It will return. I've kept my own company, and I'm on the mend."
Loken stared at the old iterator. He seemed so frail, like a baby bird, pale and skinny-necked. It had been 9 weeks since the bloodshed at the Whisperheads, and most of that time they had spent in warp transit. Loken felt he had begun to come to terms with things himself, but seeing Cinderman, he realized how close to the surface the hurt lay. He could block it out. He was Astartes, but Cinderman was a mortal man, and nothing like as resilient.
"I wish I could—"
Cinderman held up a hand.
"Please.
The War Master himself was kind enough to speak with me about it, privately. I understand what happened, and I'm a wiser man for it.
Loken got out of the chair and allowed Cinderman to take his place. The iterator sat down, gratefully.
"He keeps me close," Loken said. "Who does?"
"The War Master. He brought me in the 10th with him on this undertaking just to keep me by him.
So he could watch me."
"Because?"
"Because I've seen what few have seen. Because I've seen what the warp can do if we're not careful."
"Then our beloved commander is very wise, Gavial. Not only has he given you something to occupy your mind with, he's offering you the chance to reforge your courage in battle. He still needs you."
Cinderman got to his feet again and limped along the book stacks for a moment, tracing his thin hand across the spines. From his gait, Loken knew he hadn't healed anything like as well as he'd claimed. He seemed occupied with the books once more. Loken waited for a moment.
"I should go," he said. "I have duties to attend to."
Cinderman smiled and waved Loken on his way with eyelash blinks of his fingers.
"I've enjoyed talking with you again," Loken said. "It's been too long."
"It has."
"I'll come back soon. A day or two.
Hear your brief, perhaps."
"I might be up to that."
Loken took a book out of the basket.
"These comfort you, you say?"
"Yes."
"May I borrow one?"
"If you bring it back." "What have you there?"
Cinderman shuffled over and took the volume from Loken.
"Sumaturan poetry. I don't think that's you. Try this."
He took one of the other books out of the chair's rack.
"The Chronicles of Ush. 40 chapters detailing the savage reign of Caligan. You'll enjoy that. Very bloody, with a high body count. Leave the poetry to me."
Loken scanned the old book and then put it under his arm.
"Thanks for the recommendation."
"If you like poetry, I have some for you."
"Really?"
"One of the remembrances."
"Oh, yes."
Cinderman nodded.
"Carcassy.
I was told you'd vouched for him."
"It was a favour to a friend."
"And by friend, you mean Mercity Ollerton?"
Loken laughed. "You told me you'd kept your own company these last few months, yet you still know everything about everything."
"That's my job. The juniors keep me up to speed."
"I understand you've indulged her a little, as your own remembrancer."
"Is that wrong?"
"Not at all,"
Cinderman smiled. "That's the way it's supposed to work. Use her, Gavial. Let her use you. One day, perhaps, there will be far finer books in the Imperial Archives than these poor relics."
"Carcassy was going to be sent away. I arranged probation, and part of that was for him to submit all his work to me. I can't make head nor tail of it. Poetry. And I do poetry. Can I give it to you?"
"Of course."
Loken turned to leave.
"What was the book you put back?" he asked.
"What?"
"When I arrived, you had volumes in your basket there, but you were also studying one intently, it seemed to me. You put it back on the shelves. What was it?"
"Bad poetry," said Cinderman.
The fleet had embarked for murder less than a week after the Whisperheads incident. The transmitted request for assistance had become so insistent that any debate as to what the 63rd expedition undertook next became academic. The War Master had ordered the immediate departure of 10 companies under his personal command, leaving Varvarus behind with the bulk of the fleet to oversee the general withdrawal from 6319. Once 10th Company had been chosen as part of the relief force, Loken had found himself too occupied with the hectic preparations for transit to let his mind dwell on the incident. It was a relief to be busy. There were squad formations to be reassigned, and replacements to be selected from the Legion's novitiate and scout auxiliaries. He had to find men to fill the gaps in Hellebore and Breakspur, and that meant screening young candidates and making decisions that would change lives forever. Who were the best? Who should be given the chance to advance to full Astartes status? Togaden and Aximand assisted Loken in this solemn task, and he was thankful for their contributions. Little Horus, in particular, seemed to have extraordinary insight regarding candidates. He saw true strengths in some that Loken would have dismissed
and flaws in others that Loken liked the look of. Loken began to appreciate that Axeman's place in the Mournival had been earned by his astonishing analytical precision. Loken had elected to clear out the dormitory cells of the dead men himself.
"Bypass and I can do that," Torgadden said. "Don't bother yourself."
"I want to do it," Loken replied. "I should do it."
"Let him, Taric," said Axeman. "He's right. He should."
Loken found himself truly warming to little Horus for the first time. He had not imagined they would ever be close, but what had at first seemed to be quiet, reserved, and stern in little Horus Axeman was proving to be plain-spoken, empathic, and wise. When he came to clean out the modest Spartan cells, Loken made a discovery. The warriors had little in the way of personal effects, some clothing, some select trophies, and little, tightly bound scrolls of oath papers, usually stored in canvas cargo sacks beneath their crude cots. Amongst Xavier Jubal's meagre effects, Loken found a small silver medal, unmounted on any chain or cord. It was the size of a coin, a wolf's head set against a crescent moon.
"What is this?" Loken asked Nero Vipers, who had come along with him.
"I can't say, Garvey."
"I think I know what it is," Loken said,
a little annoyed at his friend's blank response.
"And I think you do, too."
"I really can't say."
"Then guess," Loken snapped.
Vipers suddenly seemed very caught up in examining the way the flesh of his wrist was healing around the augmetic implant he had been fitted with.
"Nero."
"It could be a lodge medal, Garvey," Vipers replied dismissively. "I can't say for sure."
"That's what I thought," Loken said.
He turned the silver medal over in his palm.
"Jabal was a lodge member then, eh?"
"So what if he was?"
"You know my feelings on the subject," Loken replied.
Officially, there were no warrior lodges, or any other kind of fraternities, within the Adeptus Astartes. It was common knowledge that the Emperor frowned on such institutions, claiming they were dangerously close to cults, and only a step away from the imperial creed, the Lectitia Divinitatis, that supported the notion of the Emperor, beloved by all, as a god. But fraternal lodges did exist within the Astartes, occult and private. According to rumours, they had been active in the 16th Legion for a long time. Some 6 decades earlier, the Lunar Wolves, in collaboration with the 17th Legion, the Word-Bearers, had undertaken the compliance of a world called Davin. A feral place, Davin had been controlled by a remarkable warrior caste, whose savage nobility had won the respect of the Astartes sent to pacify their warring feuds. The Davinite warriors had ruled their world through a complex structure of warrior lodges, quasi-religious societies that had venerated various local predators. By cultural osmosis, the lodge practices had been quietly absorbed by the legions. Loken had once asked his mentor, Cinderman, about them.
"They're harmless enough," the iterator had told him. "Warriors always seek the brotherhood of their kind. As I understand it, they seek to promote fellowship across the hierarchies of command, irrespective of rank or position. A kind of internal bond, a ribwork of loyalty that operates, as it were, perpendicular to the official chain of command."
Loken had never been sure what something that operated perpendicular to the chain of command might look like, but it sounded wrong to him. Wrong, if nothing else, in that it was deliberately secret, and thus deceitful. Wrong, in that the Emperor, beloved by all, disapproved of them.
"Of course," Cinderman had added, "I can't actually say if they exist."
Real or not, Loken had made it plain that any Astartes intending to serve under his captaincy should have nothing to do with them. There had never been any sign that anyone in the 10th was involved in lodge activities. Now the medal had turned up. A lodge medal, belonging to the man who had turned into a demon and killed his own. Loken was greatly troubled by the discovery. He told Vipers that he wanted it made known that any man in his command who had information concerning the existence of lodges should come forwards and speak with him, privately if necessary. The next day, when Loken came to sort through the personal effects he had gathered one last time, he found the medal had disappeared. In the last few days before departure, Mercedy Ollerton had come to him several times, pleading Carcass's case. Loken remembered her talking to him about it on his return from the Whisperheads,
but he had been too distracted then. He cared little about the fate of a remembrancer, especially one foolish enough to anger the expedition authorities. But it was another distraction, and he needed as many as he could get. After consulting with Malagurst, he told her he would intervene. Ignace Carcassi was a poet, and, it appeared, an idiot. He didn't know when to shut up. On a surface visit to 6319, he had wandered away from the legitimate areas of visit, got drunk, and then shot his mouth off to such an extent he had received a near-fatal beating from a crew of army troopers.
"He's going to be sent away," Mercedes said. "Back to Terra. In disgrace. His certification stripped away. It's wrong, Captain. Ignace is a good man."
"Really?"
"No, all right. He's a lousy man. Uncouth, stubborn, annoying. But he is a great poet. And he speaks the truth, no matter how unpalatable that is. Ignace didn't get beaten up for lying."
Recovered enough from his beating to have been transferred from the flagship's infirmary to a holding cell, Ignace Carcassi was a dishevelled, unedifying prospect. He rose as Loken walked in, and the stab lights came on.
"Captain, sir," he began, "I am gratified you take an interest in my pathetic affairs."
"You have persuasive friends," Loken said. "Ollerton, and Keeler, too."
"Captain Loken, I had no idea I had persuasive friends. In point of fact, I had little notion I had friends at all. Mercedes is kind, as I'm sure you've realized. Euphrate, I heard there was some trouble she was caught up in."
"There was."
"Is she well? Was she hurt?"
"She's fine," Loken replied,
although he had no idea what state Keeler was in. He hadn't seen her. She'd sent him a note requesting his intervention in Carcass's case. Loken suspected Mercedes Ollerton's influence. Ignace Carcassi was a big man, but he had suffered a severe assault. His face was still puffy and swollen, and the bruises had discoloured his skin yellow like jaundice. Blood vessels had burst in his hangdog eyes. Every movement he made seemed to give him pain.
"I understand you're outspoken," Loken said. "Something of an iconoclast."
"Yes, yes," Carcassi said, shaking his head. "But I'll grow out of it, I promise you."
"They want rid of you. They want to send you home," said Loken. "The senior remembrancers believe you're giving the Order a bad name."
"Captain, I could give someone a bad name just by standing next to them."
That made Loken smile. He was beginning to like the man.
"I've spoken with the War Master's equerry about you, Carcassi," Loken said. "There is a potential for probation here. If a senior Astarte such as myself vouches for you, then you could stay with the expedition."
"There'd be conditions?" Carcassi asked.
"Of course there would. But first of all, I have to hear you tell me that you want to stay."
"I want to stay. Great Terror, Captain. I made a mistake, but I want to stay. I want to be part of this."
Loken nodded.
"Mercedes says you should. The equerry, too, has a soft spot for you. I think Malagurst likes an underdog."
"Sir, never has a dog been so much under."
"Here are the conditions," Loken said. "Stick to them, or I will withdraw my sponsorship of you entirely, and you'll be spending a cold 40 months lugging your ass back to Terra. First, you reform your habits."
"I will, sir. Absolutely."
"Second, you report to me every 3 days, my duties permitting, and copy me with everything you write. Everything, do you understand? Work intended for publication and idle scribbles. Nothing goes past me. You will show me your soul on a regular basis."
"I promise, Captain. Though, I warn you, it's an ugly, cross-eyed, crook-backed, club-footed soul."
"I've seen ugly," Loken assured him. "The third condition. A question, really. Do you lie?"
"No, sir. I don't."
"This is what I've heard. You tell the truth. Unvarnished and unretouched. You are judged a scoundrel for this. You say things others dare not."
Carcassi shrugged, with a groan brought about by sore shoulders.
"I'm confused, Captain. Is saying yes to that going to spoil my chances?"
"Answer anyway."
"Captain Loken, I always, always tell the truth as I see it, though it gets me beaten to a pulp in army bars. And with my heart, I denounce those who lie or deliberately blur the whole truth."
Loken nodded. "What did you say, Remembrancer?"
What did you say? The provoked, honest troopers, so far, they took their fists to you.
Carcassy cleared his throat and winced.
I said the Imperium would not endure. I said that nothing lasts forever, no matter how surely it has been built. I said that we will be fighting forever, just to keep ourselves alive.
Loken did not reply.
Carcassy rose to his feet.
Was that the right answer, sir?
Are there any right answers, sir?
Loken replied.
I know this. A warrior officer of the Imperial Fists said much the same thing to me not long ago. He didn't use the same words, but the meaning was identical. He was not sent home.
Loken laughed at himself.
Actually, as I think of it now, he was, but not for that reason.
Loken looked across the cell at Carcassy.
The third condition, then. I will vouch for you, and stand in recognizance for you. In return, you must continue to tell the truth.
Really? Are you sure about that?
Truth is all we have, Carcassy. Truth is what separates us from the Xenos breeds and the traitors. How will history judge us fairly if it doesn't have the truth to read? I was told that was what the Remembrance Order was for. You keep telling the truth, ugly and unpalatable as it might be, and I'll keep sponsoring you.
Following his strange and disconcerting conversation with Kirill Sinderman in the archives, Loken walked along to the gallery chamber in the flagship's midships, where the Remembrancers had taken to gathering. As usual, Carcassy was waiting for him under the high arch of the chamber's entrance. It was their regular agreed meeting place. From the broad chamber beyond the arch floated sounds of laughter, conversation, and music. Figures, mostly Remembrancers, but also some crew personnel and military aides, bustled in and out through the archway, many in noisy, chattering groups. The gallery chamber, one of many aboard the massive flagship designed for large assembly meetings, addresses, and military ceremonies, had been given over to the Remembrancers' use once it had been recognized that they could not be dissuaded from social gathering and conviviality. It was most undignified and undisciplined, as if a small carnival had been permitted to pitch in the austere halls of the Grand Warship. All across the Imperium, warships were making similar accommodations as they adjusted to the uncomfortable novelty of carrying large communities of artists and free thinkers with them. By their very nature, the Remembrancers could not be regimented or controlled the way the military complements of the ship could. They had an unquenchable desire to meet and debate and carouse. By giving them a space for their own use, the masters of the expedition could at least ring-fence their boisterous activities. The chamber had become known as the Retreat, and it had acquired a grubby reputation. Loken had no wish to go inside, and always arranged to meet Carcassy at the entrance. It felt so odd to hear unrestrained laughter and jaunty music in the solemn depths of the vengeful spirit. Carcassy nodded respectfully as the captain approached him. 7 weeks of voyage time had seen his injuries heal well, and the bruises on his flesh were all but gone. He presented Loken with a printed sheaf of his latest work. Other Remembrancers, passing by in little social cliques, eyed the Astartes captain with curiosity and surprise.
"My most recent work," Carcassy said, "has agreed."
"Thank you. I'll see you here in 3 days."
"There's something else, Captain," Carcassy said, and handed Loken a data slate.
He thumbed it to life. Picts appeared on the screen, beautifully composed picts of him and Tenth Company, assembling for embarkation. The banner, the files. Here he was swearing his oath of moment to Targost and Sedirei, the Mournival.
"Euphrates asked me to give you this," Carcassy said.
"Where is she?" Loken asked.
"I don't know, Captain," Carcassy said. "No one's seen her about much. She has become reclusive since..."
"Since?"
"The Whisperheads."
"What has she told you about that?"
"Nothing, sir. She says there's nothing to tell. She says the first captain told her there was nothing to tell."
"She's right about that. These are fine images. Thank you, Ignace. Thank Keela for me. I will treasure these."
Carcassy bowed and began to walk back into the Retreat.
"Carcassy."
"Sir?"
"Look after Keela, please. For me. You and Ollerton.
Make sure she's not alone too often.
Yes, Captain, I will.
6 weeks into the voyage, while Loken was drilling his new recruits, Aximand came to him.
The Chronicles of Ursh,
he muttered, noticing the volume Loken had left open beside the training mat.
It pleases me,
Loken replied.
I enjoyed it as a child,
Aximand replied.
Vulgar, though.
I think that's why I like it, Loken replied. What can I do for you?
I wanted to speak to you,
Aximand said,
on a private matter.
Loken frowned. Aximand opened his hand and revealed a silver lodge medal.
I would like you to give this a fair hearing,
Aximand said, once they had withdrawn to the privacy of Loken's arming chamber.
As a favor to me. You know how I feel about lodge activities. It's been made known to me. I admire your purity, but there's no hidden malice in the lodge. You have my word, and I hope by now that's worth something.
It is. Who told you of my interest?
I can't say. Garviel, there is a lodge meeting tonight, and I would like you to attend it as my guest. We would like to embrace you to our fraternity.
I'm not sure I want to be embraced.
Aximand nodded his head.
I understand. There would be no duress. Come, attend, see for yourself, and decide for yourself. If you don't like what you find, then you're free to leave and disassociate yourself.
Loken made no response.
It is simply a band of brothers,
Aximand said.
A fraternity of warriors, by partisan and without rank.
So I've heard.
Since the Whisperheads, we have had a vacancy. We'd like you to fill it.
A vacancy, Loken said. You mean Jabal? I saw his medal.
Will you come with me?
Asked Aximand.
I will, because it's you who's asking me, said Loken.